Hi everyone, and welcome to Forest.chat, where we talk about individual endeavour in Western Australia, what it takes, what it means, and how you do it. I'm your host, Paul Vandermeer, and in today's episode, we'll be talking with Tom Wild about farming. Tom moved to the farm down in Nanup when he was 10 and has been working the farm ever since. And welcome to Forest.chat, Tom Wild.
Thanks for having me on the podcast, Paul. Hopefully it'll be interesting for you listeners.
I'm sure it will, Tom. Tom, we've got farms all over the country. Farms have been an integral part of Australian life for forever. We've got from the top of the country, you've got the big cattle grazing areas, you've got the wheat belt areas, and in the southwest, we've got a lot more variety in the types of farms that we have. Can you give us a bit of a description of the type of farm that you're on?
We're only on a small acreage farm, so it's only 160 acres. So we basically are in a sense of a farmer. We're very small, so we need to, we wanted to make a living off the land essentially, rather than having to subsidise our income with off-farm activities. So we basically had to value add. So we actually make cheese on the farm, and we realised that for a niche product, we would use something different than what everyone else uses cow's milk. So we do a sheep milk. So we milk sheep on the farm, basically. So we have a sheep dairy and we make cheese on the farm.
So the sheep dairy is the main producing component of the farm?
Yeah, so the sheep dairy and cheese factory. We also make cow's cheese through our factory as well, which we buy the milk in from other local farmers. But that's where our income stream comes from. So farming, particularly at the moment, is not very profitable, traditional farming. And being a small farm like we are, you would no way you would make a living off it without value adding. So you're finding a lot of farmers nowadays are looking for that little niche or looking for different customers to get their products to that have the same ethos as they do, basically. And that's essentially what we're doing. We're trying to make a really nice product that we can get customers to come to our farm and buy direct from us.
Right. So the size of the farm sounds like it makes quite a difference to how the business might run. So I gather that the smaller lot farms, and you're talking about 160 acres, which is, you know, I don't look at that as small, but it would be small compared to probably some of the wheat belt type properties. So what sort of point do you get to that having the farm is big enough to support itself as just a farming operation?
Yeah, that's a pretty tricky question, but there's farmers around us that probably have even up to over 1,000 acres, and they're still having to support their income. They still have off-farm either jobs or an off-farm business that they manage to do their farming as well as their business. So it's essentially you probably need a couple of thousand acres really or more down to be able to make enough money for you to be support your family with a farming without any other sources of income, basically. But yeah, you don't really see it a lot down our way. Maybe in the wheat belt you see obviously a lot bigger farms, but down where it's beef and our way, yeah, it tends to be a lot of the farmers are doing something else as well, so it's not just farming. It is a bit of a shame. Like, it would be nice to be able to make a living off the farm and not have to work elsewhere. Or maybe some farmers like having to go somewhere as well. But yeah, I don't know. I think I guess the answer is you'd have to have a fairly big acreage, and to get that, there's something that we couldn't do because we bought into the farm. It wasn't inherited. So we couldn't afford to buy, you know, 1,000 acres or 2,000 acres. So we just, we got our 160 acres and started paying that off, basically. So it wasn't if the farm is handed down in generations, you've got a lot better chance of getting a head start into farming. So yeah, with farming, you don't see a lot of new farmers coming into farming. If they are, they're going to do something like us, or they're going to have, the farm will be essentially a hobby farm, and they'll still support the farm with off-farm income. Otherwise, generally farms, when they do get sold, they get bought by another farm that already has a lot of acreage, so they can support that loan with the other farms that they already have.
That sounds like the whole industry could be in far more peril than people might imagine. They sort of think of farmers and go, oh yeah, they'll be making money off the land, you know. Yeah, it might be a bit up and down with the seasons, but you know, the money will be there. But that does not sound like what you're describing.
Yeah, I think I don't think it's in that good a position, farming, where you can, put it this way, it's just a shame that if someone wants to be a farmer, it's very difficult to get into the industry. Like if you got a young guy at school wants to be a farmer, yes, he can go and work on a farm, but to own your farm in this day and age is extremely difficult to purchase it, where, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, or probably more than that really, was a bit easier. The old boys probably wouldn't say that, but it definitely was. and I get old boy farmers come up to me now, and they say that. They're just, you know, I feel really bad for your generation that you can't get into, you know, to acquire more land and do that kind of thing, which, like, we would love to purchase more land. Down in the southwest, a lot of land goes straight to investors and hobby farmers, basically. And a lot of the land at the moment's been snatched up for tree farming and carbon farming, basically. So we, as a general farmer, you can't compete with that, with the price. So it is a bit of a worry, actually, because that's our food security, essentially.
That's got a very worrying signal around it. And understand what you're talking about with the cost of land. I mean, I've recently relocated into Australind, and part of looking around, anything that you looked at pretty much from around the Busselton area that had even a little bit of land very quickly was well through the $1 million range. The further south you went, the more millions you were talking.
Yep, exactly.
And then you have competition from, let's say, the net zero crowd who want their carbon credits because they can't do it themselves. They have to buy them in.
Yeah. So there's farms behind our farm that have been bought up now for carbon farming. The farmer that's, I know one of the farmers that's a big parcel of his land went for trees just recently, and he says the same thing. Like he said, his kids, he can make more off selling that land than he ever will from farming. And he's just giving his, basically making sure his kids have something later by having some cash flow. So to sell farmland off to that. And like, it's a big shame to do it, and he knows that. But he's got no choice, basically. It's just he's not getting enough income from farming. And while the price is high, some people are jumping on that. But you can't, as I keep telling you, can't eat trees. Farmers are putting a lot of carbon back into the soil anyway, if they're farming right. There's a lot more to it than what people think or what they're told. Yes.
Yeah, that's a pretty big part of what we're facing in society in general. So that's cool. I think that gives us a reasonable rounding of the scenario of farming. So what does it take these days, Tom, to actually be a farmer? You know, what sort of things do you need as an individual to make it a success?
I heard a good quote the other day, actually. It's, if you're not an optimist, you will never be a farmer, or something like that. So to be a farmer, you need to be an optimist. And that's quite true. So it's you got to be optimistic about the future, I guess. But yeah, to be, I guess to be a farmer now, it takes, it depends what farm you're on, really. There's a lot of different.
So let's think about your farm. What is it? What do you? What are the things that you lean on to run your farm?
So our farm's a pretty, I always say it's a pretty difficult business because it's, we essentially have four businesses on our farm. So we have the farm basically as one. And then we have a dairy. So we milk sheep, and then we have the cheese factory to produce the cheese to sell. Oh, sorry. Well, basically I put the dairy and farm into one. So dairy and farm's in one. Then we have the cheese factory and to produce the cheese, and then we have a, we distribute our own cheese to the restaurants and wholesale cafes and shops. So that's a distribution business, which is third. Mm-hmm. And then we have cottages on our farm for farm stay as well. So we do four different businesses. So it's a pretty, like, it's a lot of, makes your mind boggle, our farm actually. There's a lot to it, and we probably don't do anything perfect because we're so spread out over those four. But essentially we'd like to be able to get like other farmers to milk, maybe like milk sheep for us. And then that will take a bit of pressure off the dairy side of things. And then we can do focus on the cheese making. The distribution side of the cheese, it goes in with what we do. I don't think we can, we've tried distributed stuff before, but we prefer to sell direct. So we'd stay with that. But yeah, having a dairy and a cheese factory, you don't really ever get a break. It's pretty tough. But yeah, I think if we build, once we build up a bit more, build the business up a bit more in numbers and stuff, then we might be able to, you know, like employ more staff and to take over a bit of the, or maybe someone essentially will manage the cheese side of things or the farm side of things just to take a bit of pressure off. But yeah, yep. As for us, it's pretty, you got to be a bit of a jack of all trades, and you're learning on the go all the time, basically.
Yeah, I can imagine that, you know, just thinking at it from a project type perspective where you go, you know, every season is a project. So you've got a lot of moving parts there. You've got everything to do with the sheep that you've got on the farm, and then you've got everything to do with the cheese production side of things. So you've got all of these different, you know, one flows from the other, but they're different beasts.
Yeah, very different. And it's farming's so seasonal, so you need to be, you need to kind of be onto it and ready to go. You know, when you've got the next thing coming up. So you don't know when the season's going to break, and you want to be able to get seed in your paddocks and stuff like that when the season's there. So that's all the stuff that I'm kind of doing. Essentially this year we stopped the milking a little bit earlier. We stopped the milking so we can, basically because it's been so dry this year for one, and we're running out of hay to feed them, so we don't want to fall short later in the season. So we stopped early, but also second reason for that was just so we can concentrate on organising some stuff for the year ahead. So normally it's by the time we finish milking in March, April, then you've only got a couple of months until the sheep lamb again. And there's just no time to get the other jobs done, like the seeding and the shearing and things in between. So now we've brought it back a couple of, like a month or 6 weeks, and I think it's already made a big difference. So just to try and free us up a bit. So I got two young kids as well at home. So, and my wife works in the business as well. The kids come to work with us, and my mum babysits them basically on the farm, so she can get some stuff done. She's a huge part of it as well. So yeah, it's a team work for sure. team job.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like it. So a bit later on, we'll get to talk about, you know, what a day looks like. You know, there's quite a lot going on. There's juggling of all sorts of things that need to be done. But there's also recognising when the seasons break and change and that sort of thing, so that you can get your timing right to maximise outputs, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. You got to be a very organized person to be a farmer, and I'm probably not a super organized person. So, but I'm getting better, and luckily my wife's very organized. So, between the two of us, we can get things done.
That's yeah. The perfect team when you can work together and you can help each other. You know, they're good at the thing that you're not so good at, and vice versa.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, Tom, how did you learn about farming?
I just basically started to do it. So when we moved to the farm when I was 10, you just start working in the farm, basically. But you probably like anything, when you're doing it, you'll learn a lot more if you're super interested in it or if you're 100% behind it. So I've probably only started to learn, in my opinion, probably not because I've been more interested, just because I got a lot more into it and very interested in the soils and things like that, that before it was just kind of, you just got some advice from an agronomist, but now I want to know why. It's not that I don't trust people, but I just read into things a lot more, and I want to make my own assumption of it as well. And it's like that with anything. I found, even with animals and using vets and things like that, I don't want to just get someone in when there's a problem. I want to know why the problem started. So I guess I just do a lot of reading now, and a lot of research, and read on up old articles and things like that. If I think I've got a problem with something, then I'll just research and research and research, and then trial and error. You try things, and if it works, you do it again, basically. Yeah, if it doesn't, you shove it back in there. But you remember a lot of things, and I've changed a lot of things with the farm in the last few years. I think it's definitely, the farm is definitely running smoother. Yeah, for sure. But the prices at the moment aren't probably making that look like it is. price of lamb and beef at the moment is terrible. For everyday farm, the running of the farm and looking at how operating in the soils and the grass and stuff that's there, I think we're definitely getting, we've improved a lot over the years.
That's really good to hear that there's the improvement. And it sounds like you're going about it in a good way, and that you're, before you're making those changes, you're looking at what's going on and why it's happening, and then you can make more informed decisions. They're not necessarily the right decisions, as you've probably found, but they do actually have more merit than just putting your finger in the air and going, oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Yeah, there's a lot of information out there now for farming, a lot of podcasts, YouTube channels and all that on regenerative farming, basically, they've named it these days. But it's basically sustainable farming. And I've just got a bit of a thing that I use on the farm. If I wouldn't eat it, then I wouldn't give it to my animals, basically. So I'm not going to spray paddocks and stuff. If I wouldn't eat that grass that they're going to eat it, then why am I going to make them eat it? So that's my kind of thing at the moment that we've done for the last few years.
Keeping the source as natural as practicable is a worthy goal.
Yes, yeah, definitely. And with what we do, it's probably a little bit easier in a way for us, because we talk to our customers, we see them, so we can tell them that story, and you know that they can come and trust that they can look at it, they can come and see for themselves what we do and talk about it with us. So if they want clean quality product, they can come to you. But where a normal an everyday farmer who sends his, say, beef off to the slaughterhouse or abattoir, he will never see his customer. So it's not that they don't care, but they just don't interact with their customer. So, like, even, yeah, what I'm trying to say, I guess, it, like, if I go to, because we go to the farmers markets and sell our cheese in Margaret River every Saturday. When, if you're feeling a bit down in the dumps about what you're doing about farming in general, you can go and do that market on the Saturday morning, and it's like a pick me up drug. It's just talking to people because they love your product, and it just gives you a morale boost. And sometimes in the back of my mind, I'm thinking the other farmers that are selling their produce just straight into the markets and that don't see their customer, how do they cope with that, with not seeing, you know, the people happy with what they've done? And that, I think there's a big divide between the consumer and the farmer nowadays, and you're not getting that. But I think that a lot more people are starting to want to buy direct from the farm when they can see it. And that is not just good for the consumer, but it's really good for the farmer too, because it's just a morale boost and positive thing in their life, basically. I think it's really good for everyone.
Yeah, so that adds a lot of meaning to what you're doing.
Yeah, that's probably what I'm trying to say. It's a meaning, meaningful. So I think the more customers that can support farmers directly, the better for the industry, for not only for the customer, but obviously the farmer. And it's a win-win situation. So it's basically cutting out the middleman, but it's not purely for an income side of things, but also for the interaction between farmers and consumers, basically. So we're losing that now with the big corporations and supermarkets, basically. So if you can go down to your local farmers market, supermarket, don't go to local supermarket, go to your local farmers market and talk to your farmer and quiz them about what they do as well, like if you're interested in that, because they love it. Farmers love talking about their property, and they love that people are interested in what they do. You're not only going to get a lot better quality product, you're also going to give someone a boost for their day and put a smile on their face for the rest of the week until they come back to the market the weekend after. So, no, it's definitely a good thing to do, and I think there's a lot more of it happening now. Source your products directly from the farmer whenever you can.
That's very important to keep the industry going. We heard earlier about just how fragile the farming is locally, where, you know, even land sizes and those sorts of things are making it difficult for farmers to continue, and they have to go off and do so many different things. So supporting your local farmer is pretty critical to our food security. That's a lot, Tom. It sure does take some effort to operate a farm. Putting effort towards something that is worthwhile is good for the soul and good for the community. The farmer's effort is worthwhile. They provide many benefits for the community, and as we've just heard. Next, we'll look at a day in the life of a farmer. There is a lot for a farmer to do, Tom. Talk us through a typical day during, let's say, the milking season.
Yep. So we lamb our sheep in June or July. So it would be July this year because I chose a little bit later date. So basically from July to August is probably the busiest time of year for us. Well, for me personally, because I do all the lambing with the sheep. All the recording of their lambs, so all the data basically. So they're all tagged or marked at birth, so I know who's which sheep has what lambs. So when we go to breed future breeders, we can choose the best ones. Yeah, so for that, I'd be up. I can't really do it in the dark too much because it's hard to spot the sheep. So I got to basically it on daybreak. So whatever time that is. So maybe around 6:30, or probably 7 o'clock in winter, I'd be up. So I'd be up before that, obviously get breakfast and stuff. And then we've got two farms, so I lease a farm. So that's where I live. I live with my wife on one of the lease properties. So I'd get up in the morning and run around the sheep here on the quad bike obviously rug up in winter because it's cold, and go around the sheep and just make sure everything overnight's been okay. So sheep can have problems lambing as well. So you're basically their helper if you need to assist them in any way, or and then you're basically recording on the way. So I've got a spreadsheet on my phone now that I just record tag numbers of the mothers and then jump off and mark the lamb to go with that mother. Or generally they have two or three lambs each, so it's a bit of a nightmare. They have a lot of lambs, so it's a hectic time of year and can be quite stressful. And sheep are a bit silly, so they don't tend to look after their lambs that well. So they might have triplets and they walk off with two and the other one gets lost. So that's essentially why I mark them. So then I can find, or I can re-mother them up. If they're not such a good mother, I can put them in a smaller pen. So a lot of work there, but I get around these ones as quickly as I can. That maybe take an hour or so in the morning. And then I head over to the other farm, which is about 15 minutes from here, to Cambrai, which is the main farm where the dairy is. And then I'll basically, normally my old man will start milking before I get there when we're lambing. It depends on what problems I've got down here. But yeah, he'll be starting to milk, and then I'll just give him a hand to finish milking, or I'll go around the ewes that are lambing there as well. So we have ewes that are lambing there and here. We normally lamb our milkers there, and then down here we have more of a meat style breed, which we can milk them as well, but they generally are what we call our B class milkers. So if they have twins, they'll just stay down here and raise lambs basically. Yeah, so then from then I normally will pop my head into the cheese factory then and organise what they're going to make that day. So all of our cheeses are made, if it's early in the week, it'll be soft cheeses, and then we make mature cheeses later in the week. So yeah, basically do a bit of a stock take and work out what everyone's doing for the week. And then that will normally get us to morning tea. We have a 10 o'clock morning tea on the farm where everyone stops basically for 20 or so minutes. So all our staff will have a morning tea together, and it's quite nice, and our staff, everyone loves it. It's a good catch up in the morning basically. So that's, everyone's kind of there for that if they can be. And then after that, I'll be either doing cheese factory stuff, or I'll be back out on the farm tending to what problems I need to fix that I found in the morning with lambing. But generally I'll go around the sheep three times a day on the main farm and then twice a day on my lease property where I live. So when I get back home in the afternoon, I'll go through them again. But yeah, so for the rest of the day, I'd probably do probably back into the cheese factory for a bit if I can, otherwise whatever needs to be done on the farm. And then we milk again at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So back into milking again, and that's normally for a couple of hours, and then back home from there, or run around the sheep at the farm again, back home, and then check the ones at my place. And quite often the ones I'm at my place, I'm checking them with a spotlight at night, so it's normally dark by the time I get back. And then you just run around with a spotlight on the quad and check them. But yeah, the last couple of years has been even more difficult because I normally have a helper. Like my wife usually comes with me and checks the sheep, but with two young kids, you got to make sure they're all in bed and tucked away before. So, which is like last year, she came out and helped me a lot at nighttime if we needed to. But I'll quite often go around my sheep because I'm there. I'll go around them at 9, 10 o'clock at night just to make sure that they're okay and there's no foxes and things around as well. So I just like to do that last check if I can. And then you're not having such a big issue again in the morning. It's not such a big gap from 5 o'clock, 5 or 6 o'clock in the afternoon through till 7 in the morning. That's lambing, but every season's completely different. So yeah, that's only one day of the year.
But yeah. One day of one season.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah.
Oh. Yeah, and it's literally sun up till spotlights on in the evening.
Yes, yeah, it is at lambing time. I pretty much if we have friends or anything that want to come and stay, I don't generally have them come and stay, basically, or my wife has to entertain them. She pretty much counts me out of action for that. The month, basically. The first month is when it's the most full on, and then it kind of dwindles in after that. I don't get away from the farm at all in that month.
Farmer's Day is jam-packed with a bewildering array of things to do. Thank you for sharing your experience as a farmer, Tom, and from all the Forest.chat listeners, we wish you all the best in your farming endeavours.
Yeah, thank you very much, Paul, and thanks for having me on again. It was really nice to talk to you.
Thanks, Tom. You've been listening to Forest.chat, where we talk about individual endeavour in Western Australia, what it takes, what it means, and how you do it. I'm your host, Paul Vandermeer, and in today's episode, we talked with Tom Wild about being a farmer. Remember, there are four ways you can get involved with the Forest.chat podcast. Share the domain, Forest.chat, with your friends and family and people you meet. Listen to the published episodes at forest.chat/episodes. Book an interview at forest.chat/interview. Book an advert at forest.chat/advert. I'm looking forward to joining you with our next interview. Until next time, enjoy making it happen.